T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
You don't sense the Brewers are going to run away with it. They might. I'm not suggesting the Cubs should or will, obviously. But the schedule, pretty agreeable in July.
Yeah. If it wasn't for that terrible 11-game losing streak, we'd be having a different conversation, obviously. And I think that if you look at it with 2 weeks before the trade deadline, you know, you're going to hopefully sweep this series in Arizona. Can you get a 3-game loss for the Brewers? Can you figure out a way of immediately picking up some steam here? And I don't even know what the number would be, but when Jed came out and talked about the situation they were in and where they were at,
we need to make sure we have a lot of young talent. We need to make sure that we're not afraid of roster turnover. You know, based on sentimentality, we have to think about, you know, what is the right thing for this organization long term.
This is what follows.
It's over. This is the beginning of the end.
Yes.
This is the first move.
Yeah.
This is the answer to a trivia question.
This is,
yeah,
right.
Who was the first player to go in the great Cubs sell-off of 2021? Jock Peterson.
Mike Mulligan and David Hall taking you up to 9 o'clock on 670 The Score.
Okay, let's go.
Mulligan Hall, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Good morning, Monday, July 19th. We are broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers, and we are pleased to welcome Tom Thayer in for Mully today. Mully on vacation. Good morning, Tom.
Big Dave, good to be here. Nice to see you.
Good to see you. Good to see you back in around town and back in the studio. It's fun. We're going to have a good couple days here, and you're on the mend. I did not realize that. We got to get that out of the way here first, because I think people are, they need to know how you are playing a little hurt, but you're here early, ready to go. Hip replacement.
Yeah, had a little hip replacement surgery a couple weeks ago. Feels great. Doctors did a great job, great staff, great facility, and ready to roll. You know, it's kind of funny is nowadays you kind of meet up with different guys along the way, and you get, you're on a golf course, something, and just jokingly, I always have a question. Hey, does everybody have their own body parts? And it's amazing now how many people raise their hands to start explaining how many different body parts they have at this point. So, you know, my brother-in-law played 10 years in the league, and he had both of his shoulders replaced. You know, I had one hip resurfaced, and I've had one hip replaced.
Resurfaced? It sounds like a highway.
You know, it's a different procedure than the one I had, the total hip replacement, which the NFL will help you pay for. When I had this arthroplasty hip resurfacing, right, on my right hip, the NFL considers it cosmetic surgery, and they won't help you pay for it. So I had to go to the most financially helped procedure I could go through.
So you look like $1 million. You've been staying, obviously, as in shape as ever. Your off season consists of the same routine. You talk a lot about being in Hawaii. How much of this surgery was surfing related, and how much of it was from your football career?
You know, I think that it has multiple. You know, when you talk about getting in a 3-point stance, and then that leads to a collision, and then you talk about the amount of squats and heavy weightlifting that you have to do throughout a lifetime. And then after I got done playing, I stayed active, played a lot of beach volleyball, 2-man beach volleyball. It surfed a lot, as much as I can. But it had an impact on my surfing, because usually I'd go out there for a lot longer period of time, but then it became so painful. It's just something that I had to address. So, you know, I'm not discouraged in any way, shape, or form. It's a part of life. And, you know, my dad, he had a blue-collar lifestyle and had, you know, multiple things, you know, both of his knees replaced and everything. So,
well, that's great. We appreciate you getting up early, getting in here. You're always on time and eager and ready to roll. So we are looking forward to a couple of days because there's a lot to talk about. There's a lot going on. We will have our, you know, our share of Bears conversation. It would be foolish to waste your resource in here and your expertise. So we will get to a lot of things regarding Allen Robinson and Eddie Goldman and some of the issues lingering around Hallis Hall. But over the weekend, it was a big baseball weekend in town, especially for the White Sox. The White Sox welcomed the Astros into Chicago. Friday night did not go well. Friday night was one of those games where after they lose 10-1, I believe, you're starting to feel like, okay, this is the affirmation of a lot of people's fears and all of the things about them not being able to beat good teams. I think the record is 18-25 against teams 500 or better. And Friday night you thought, oh boy, this is a team that's going to let us down. And then Saturday and Sunday happened, Tom. And on Saturday, Lucas Giolito gives up one run. And on Sunday, Carlos Rodon says, I can top that. I'll give up one hit. And he combined with Michael Kopech and Liam Hendricks to keep the Astros to one hit. And the White Sox take 2 out of 3, and that's called a statement. That's called a statement. I think they did what they needed to do, and you come out of the series feeling like, wow, that is a team that is to be taken seriously, and just wait until they get healthy.
Yeah, it's kind of strange because Friday night, I'm done with them. I can't take it anymore. And then they backed up by two great pitching performances on Saturday and Sunday. And so when you look at the one hit given up by Giolito or the one run given up by Rodon,
yep. Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, what's the bigger, you know, the thing about it is when you got a couple guys on base and you get them around the base path and they score, you know, there's a couple guys that have an effect. But then you look at Giolito, it's one pitch that a guy got a hold of in the point where I think they had a 9-run lead at that point, 9 or 10-run yeah. lead. So it's like, you know, so what? But, you know, I was a little nervous after Friday night because the Sox hadn't beaten Houston, and it was almost like I was really impressed with the crowd support because you look into the stands and usually you're seeing bodies spread all over the place at guaranteed rate. But here it is, man. You see a sea of people there. The concourses are packed. The whole atmosphere seems like a really supportive atmosphere that's really an important role in the second half of the season by the fans. So I was happy to see that.
There's a sense that something special is happening, and yeah. people are catching on if they haven't already, and that is reflected by the full crowds at the ballpark. Anecdotal evidence and social media activity, though, would suggest that not everybody's having the greatest time. It's easy to get there, but not as easy to get out of. And I heard from a couple friends who went to the game who, let's just say, maybe the exit process is not as working as well or as efficiently as the back end of the White Sox bullpen. So yeah. they're getting out of games easier than it is to get out of the ballpark. So they might need some work there. But it is an atmosphere. It is a thing. And the White Sox are for real. And so I don't know that anybody doubted that. But here they are, 20 games over 500, I believe. And it's the highest watermark, the most they've been over 500 since 2008.
Yeah. I mean, but I think this is the expectations that they started the season with. And it's kind of nice to see that they've lived up to the expectations, even though they've had a couple of key components that have been missing due to injuries. However, it seems like every guy that they bring into the mix, they come in with a real positive vibe with them. And then they continue to contribute that type of performance out there. And, you know, I look at Abreu and I look at Tim Anderson and I look at the veterans that they have and even the core guys in the pitching staff. That is a fun dugout to be in.
Yeah.
You know, because whatever you think of Tony La Russa at this point, this stage in his career, he kind of sits in his corner and lets the players have more than three quarters of that dugout. And there's hugging and shaking and high-fiving and smiling and hand signals. I think that's what every guy looks forward to in being a part of a team sport, is that type of atmosphere.
He lets them be themselves. He said he was going to do that, and he has followed through with it. It's much easier when your team is as good as the White Sox are, but they are the best team in the American League. And over the weekend, they look like the best team in baseball. And anybody that scoffs at that notion as being, you know, hyperbole or an exaggeration – They beat the Astros, and the Astros came in with a powerful offense, and on Saturday and Sunday were limited to one run, and on Sunday, one hit. So this was a big deal and a great weekend for the White Sox. And I think even saying all that, Tom, maybe the biggest story or the most significant development in terms of their future, maybe not to this season, Lance Lynn signed a 2-year, $38 million contract extension on Saturday. They announced it after Inside the Clubhouse ended at 11 o'clock, so we did not have that on the air in the morning. But that's a big deal because it, number one, shows that's what good organizations do. They identify the talent that they want to retain. And even though Lance Lynn is at the stage of his career that he is, this rewards him and reinvests in the success that he's had this year. It seems like a bargain given the going rate for guys of his caliber, pitchers that could be considered aces, but it's money well spent, and that's a big deal to have him, to know that he's coming back next 2 years.
Kind of a preemptive strike against the Cubs because there's so much uncertainty of what the big guys for the Cubs are going to do. Are they coming back, or are they just trying to look to see where their next home is going to be? And I think that's a distracting conversation inside the clubhouse pre and post game, and when other players from other teams are on the field, because believe it or not, they ask you that question all the time, what's going to happen? But when you look at the Sox situation, they're trying to make a positive atmosphere even more positive. And I know it'll probably affect the way that some agents and some guys think within their own clubhouse. However, at least they got a little bit of momentum started in a positive direction.
The big question we'll address down as we continue to talk about this throughout the show this morning, what does it mean to the future of Carlos Rodon, and if they can lock up Lance Lynn to a contract extension, could they do the same and make the same gesture to Carlos Rodon, who has a different agent, which may complicate things because the agent's name is Scott Boras. So let's wait and see where that's headed, because that always seems to get a little bit tricky. You mentioned the Cubs. They had a good weekend. Was it a good weekend in Arizona? I think that you want to sweep. When you're playing a Diamondback team that is on pace for 46 victories, you go in there thinking anything short of a sweep is maybe disappointing, but they win 2 out of 3. They lose yesterday, but they had some good moments on Saturday. Wilson Contreras delivered a home run that was clutch. Friday night they took care of business. So they win 2 out of 3 against a very bad team. Is that worth celebrating? How do you look at that one, Tom?
You know, to me, it's you got to win series. I don't care about games because, you know, as good as they looked at the first game after the All-Star break, they came out and they had a powerful win. Then they had the second one. They hung on by a, you know, they did a nice job in the ninth inning to end up winning a game and walk away with a W again. And that's kind of what you talk about because you don't have a lot of turnaround time when you got to start talking about the next game. And then you happen to lose that one. So I think when you're talking about Cubs in the future, is you have to talk about them winning series. You can't talk about them winning individual games because I don't think that's what's going to hold them together. It's going to be about winning these series. And if they want to, you know, kind of rekindle the thoughts of playing playoff baseball, it's going to be by series.
Is that realistic, though? Javi Baez, who had a couple hits yesterday and had a decent weekend, he talks after the game and he's mentioned about being, you know, in the moment and being focused because the quest to get back into first place. And I understand that as a player, you've got to say these kind of things and maybe stay inside of that sort of mental space. But I just look at it ever since Jed Hoyer said what he said about being sellers, it all but declared the season over. These games, yes, they matter and you play them, but getting back into first place, given the way the Cubs have played, you know, the last 3 weeks seems like an unrealistic goal.
Well, then if you're going to sell, then sell. You know, I mean, you don't sit there and dangle the carrot in front of the horse and just try to make everybody look suspiciously over their shoulder and if their uniform's still hanging in their locker. If it has to happen, then let it happen so you can start building for the future. But, you know, I as much as I admired Javi a couple years ago, or I was really excited about everything that he brought, but it's almost like Wilson Contreras to me is the new Javi Baez. He's the motivator. He's the exciter. He's the guy behind the plate that is in control of a lot of faces that he's looking out at. He's got great intentions. He plays with a lot of enthusiasm. So,
and how about that home run Saturday?
Pretty.
It was so cool. It almost knocked the Cubs off television for a quick hot moment. That was
That was quite the
that
highlight.
Was exciting. You know, that's what, you know, I think baseball fans that sit there and they watch those games from first inning to the end of the game, when you get rewarded like that at the end of the game, it's exciting.
For people that missed that, Wilson Contreras hits the home run, and briefly, the Bally Sports feed from Arizona that the Cubs were calling the game off of a marquee, correct, with Boog Sciambi, they lost it for a moment. I thought that Boog Sciambi did a terrific job of not necessarily letting people know just how hard that was to call. You can relate to this, I'm sure, as a broadcaster calling Bears games from remote locations, and could have been worse is what my reaction was, because it was the worst possible time to have an interruption of the feed. And yet I thought Boog Sciambi did a nice job of you know, making the best of a bad situation.
Well, don't Pat and Coom and Zach get the same feed? Are they calling the game off of a different feed?
They also had issues.
They had an interruption in pitch,
yes,
or two.
Yes, they did. And I talked to Zach, or I communicated with Zach yesterday, and it was just as difficult for them. But I, you know, at the time, sometimes I will sync up the radio with the television, but I happened to be at a place where it wasn't possible. And so he was like, oh my gosh. And you did wonder, and they did it. They are working off the same feed, but I thought he was pretty smooth in the way that he handled
the
it.
The bartender wouldn't sync it up for you.
That's right.
You're out clubbing.
That's harder to do when you're doing, when you're out and about, I guess. I wouldn't call it clubbing though, Tom, not now. But yeah, that was, Wilson Contreras with another clutch moment, and I'm curious to get your thoughts later on in the show when we dive into the Cubs a little bit deeper to see what you think about the week that he has had and the message that he has sent and the reception of it by his Cubs teammates, because your perspective on his brand of leadership will be very interesting.
Someone's got to say something.
Yeah, I think that probably is the direction that I would lean as well. So there was a lot of other things going on in baseball. Really scary moment outside Nationals Park in Washington, D.C. on Saturday night when they had shots fired. They didn't realize, they didn't know a lot. And in those uncertain moments about a story like that, you think your imagination goes to, you know, I think somebody on social media talked about it was random, or somebody was shooting into the ballpark, and then the reports kind of clarified there was an incident unrelated to the ball, to the game itself, or to the ballpark area, but it was outside the ballpark, and could have been worse. But just scary moment to watch the fans with that fear leaving the ballpark the way that they did, and the players going from the Padres who were visiting, going to secure their families and keep them safe.
Right. Yeah, that was interesting. The players inviting people into the dugout area to make sure that they had, you know, in a safe position, but. You know, I'm glad. I'm not glad at anything, because it's a scary moment. But just trying to take control of the situation immediately,
right?
Either with the PA announcer inside the stadium trying to give specific directions to people how not to, you know, clutter the atmosphere of where they're trying to keep people out of, or people are just hunkering in their seats until they got the all safe. But you know, the worst thing about it is when you're watching a sport or watching something on TV, and all of a sudden they just chime in with that message. Then all of a sudden, that's going through your head is worst case scenario. Oh yes. My God, you know, considering some of the stories that came out of the All-Star game when they found a group of people that had some weapons stashed in that area.
In the hotel room. That's the first thing you think of.
Right. That's the thing about it. You just start thinking of worst-case scenario.
Colin Morikawa won the Open, not the British Open, but it is the British Open to us, but it's only the Open over there. He takes a 15-under par score for the victory. He beats out Jordan Spieth, who was 13-under. We had an Olympic basketball team victory on Sunday night. Zach LaVine fouled out and had 13 points, contributed in a big way to an 83-76 victory over Spain. And, Tom, there's something going on in Milwaukee tomorrow night, Game 6. It could be the first time in 50 years the Bucks win an NBA title. Giannis with another legacy moment, the alley-oop dunk. They beat the Suns on Saturday night to go up 3-2 in the best-of-seven NBA finals. That was quite a moment for Giannis.
You know, the steal by Jrue Holiday, because
yep.
Booker not really paying attention to kind of where all the defenders are on the floor. But that athleticism by Giannis with that alley-oop, and just the, everything that goes along with it. Having a guy dribble on a ball full speed down the court and these guys being on the same wavelength to go, okay, I'm going to flip it up near the rim, get it, put it in, and you know, get keep the lead for us. It was an amazing game. You know, I've been watching a lot of the NBA playoffs and just super impressed and disappointed at the same way in some of the basketball, some of the fundamentals of basketball that we don't see them anymore in basketball, where it's kind of disappointing when no one follows a shot anymore. It's all about, you know, every guy on the team taking 3-point shots and either they're sitting there admiring them or just taking off backwards. And I know it's about getting back on defense, but there was a team, Atlanta, a couple weeks ago, they had a guy on their team that would follow 3-point shots. And he ended up coming up with like 7 points because he got another 3-point or something. I just unfollowed shots. No one does. It's just like no one
follows a shot anymore.
No one follows a shot anymore. And it's like the other night when Akeem came into the game. And you think of, you know, how famous he made the hook shot for a 7-plus, a 7-plus foot guy.
Where's the hook shot going? Kareem Abdul-Jabbar took it with him.
And you got two 7-footers on Milwaukee that are more willing to take a 3-pointer instead of using their frame inside near the basket.
We will cover more basketball thoughts with Tom Thayer and other things as we continue with the 5 at 5 coming up next. We've got a lot to get to. Tom Thayer is in for Mully. Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Mully and Haw on The Score.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first 3 orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station. It's 5 at 5 with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top 5 sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767 or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. 5 at 5 with Mully and Haw starts now.
What did the White Sox prove by taking 2 out of 3 this weekend from the Astros? And was it the proof you needed to see? What was the best part of this series from the White Sox perspective?
I think the best part of the series from the White Sox perspective was that it piped down some of the skeptics that believe that they were bum slayers, as they say, as we have been referring to them as, that they could only beat teams that were below them in the standings and worse than them overall. And that's not the case. That is not the case at all. And I think what happens is that you fall into these traps of believing things to be true. Perception becomes reality. But the White Sox starting pitching is good enough to be as good as they need to be and to keep every goal alive. And I think that's the thing that happened over the weekend, is you were reminded of that. And on Saturday, it was Lucas Giolito. On Sunday, it was Carlos Rodon. And that, from a Sox perspective, is the formula. You can see them beating anybody. Rodon, Kopech, Hendricks. You can go throughout the baseball, you can go out the American League and find, you're not going to find any trio that if you're in a close game, you're going to trust any more than these guys. The way that Rodon has pitched, the way that Kopech pitches, and what Liam Hendricks has to offer. And then you get some big hits from Tim Anderson, Yoan Moncada. These are good signs. You see Jose Abreu as well. And then there's so much. What is the best part of the series from the Sox perspective? I mean, we could be here all day. Jake Berger gets his first major league home run. That was terrific. You see guys coming through in ways that they need to come through. Billy Hamilton with another diving catch. Defensively, they're sound. Offensively, they're clutch. Pitching-wise, forget about it. This is a team that is for real, and their starting pitching is going to carry them as far as they go, and I think that's going to be a very, very long way.
You know, say, what did the White Sox prove by taking two out of three? They kind of prove they belong. If you want to start having conversations with some of the better teams within their division, the Sox belong in that conversation. Now, if they would have went out there and got beaten like they did on Friday night, then we would be talking about a whole different subject matter here about where are they going and stuff. So I do think that they prove they belong in the conversation of the best. You know, as exciting as it was to watch the pitching and to see what these guys were able to accomplish against one of the better lineups in the league, I was more excited to see the role of batters that the Sox can throw at you. Because if a manager wants to go and have a pitching change, you're not going to face an easier batter. You're going to face a batter that has home run potential, that has speed on the bases, that has the ability to take a single and turn it into a double. And it's a bunch of different names. And so, you know, I want to ask Steve Stone, you know, why Moncada was pinch hitting, because, you know, it kind of confused me, because there's other guys you could have put in that role that need some reps at the plate, but then he comes up and hits a home run, you know. So it's kind of impressive when you look at how many guys have big bat ability that, you know, from, you know, 1 to 9 in this lineup, that I think it's scary for a manager when they're trying to make pitching changes, because they can go up there and make a change for themselves, or else they can have a guy that can approach the plate that has home run potential.
This is a team in the Astros that is going to be in the postseason, along with the White Sox, more than likely, both these. So I'm glad it mattered. The White Sox tried to play that game. Liam Hendricks was on this station on Friday. Great interview, but acting like it still didn't matter. Then Friday night, I felt like they laid an egg. And I'm like, see, this is the problem. Like, you have to think that it matters. Even though at that point it was only, July 16th, right? That was Friday, was the 16th of July.
Yeah.
It mattered. And they showed that Tim Anderson being, it seems like, is back. Like, he went to the All-Star game, didn't get the at-bat. He said it didn't matter. I think it mattered.
I think it mattered to him.
Yeah, I do,
I
too.
I was surprised that he kind of revealed that as much.
He took the high road, but I think this motivated him. He had a very nice series. It was nice to see the power surge, right? And that was nice on Saturday. Five guys hitting home runs, including Abreu, who still isn't all the way back, but it was nice to see him hit that long ball in a game that mattered. Lucas Giolito talking about how disappointed he was with his first half and how much that game Saturday night mattered to him. Now, I wonder if they needed to, if he needed to pitch as long as he did. Let's see how he comes out of that game. I don't know that was necessarily necessary, if you can say that. But good for that. They are on pace. This is a team that's now on pace with all these injuries. They could win 100 games.
Oh, yeah.
This year.
I think they probably will win 100
there
games.
There are 70 games left on their schedule, and this division that they're playing in is not very good.
And a lot of starters just hitting their stride. Did you like the inflatable garbage cans that were floating around there?
Thought that was going to be a big no-no. I was listening to you guys on my way back from the Dells on Friday, and I thought that was going to be a big no-no, that the people over at 35th and Shields were not going to have any of this games. But I like the fun and games.
Very amusing.
Yeah. I think it was kind of a subtle approach to it. We're not going to kick you out of the stadium if you do it. And it's okay if you do it. Just don't go overboard. Don't throw a metal can over the edge. Right. Throw an inflatable one.
Yeah, that's a great question.
Can the Cubs feel good about winning a series on the road against the Diamondbacks? Or was it a sweep or bust weekend? Or does it really matter, since the focus of everything since Jed Hoyer spoke has been winning and losing trades? Do you envision motivation and focus being an issue now for the Cubs?
Like I said before, winning a series, I think that's the important part of this. No matter what the record is for Arizona, with 26 wins or something like that, they went out there and they did what's expected of them, what they're supposed to do, the belief they have in the clubhouse. You know, now it's different. So now you go to St. Louis and they have the same record. There's a lot of emotion that's packed into this rivalry here. And is it something that the Cubs are going to be able to carry on, that same momentum that they created in Arizona, and the feeling of, you know, all in this together type of hopefully approach to the remainder of the season, no matter what's going on behind closed doors? So I think it is, yeah, you won the series against Arizona, but can you do the same against a team that's kind of more on par with you where you are at this point in the season? If you go there and you go into St. Louis and you just get swept and you look bad doing it, then I think it really takes away from the good feeling you have about winning a series. Like I said, win the series, not just games.
The problem is I don't even know what it would mean if the Cubs win the series. It is a series against your rival. You do want to be at your best. You're facing a team that has been in free fall almost as long or longer than you have been, but can relate to the struggles that you've had, and they've been very streaky as well. And you have two disappointing teams facing off. And yes, it does matter to the Cubs, but I don't know that provides the biggest suspense this week. Are the Cubs going to win this series? How are they going to do against the Cardinals? I think I want to know who's next. I think I want to know, okay, how are the trade talks going for Craig Kimbrell? What about Ryan Tepera? Is Chris Bryant any closer to becoming a Met or a National? I wonder these things, and that kind of focus supersedes what is going on the field for us outside of the ball club. I wonder how it is for players inside the clubhouse. I wonder, obviously, they're professionals. They're paid to focus on the nine innings at hand and the game and each at bat and each inning and all those things. But there's a ton of distractions there for the offing if you are paying attention to the rumors. And I imagine that it's very difficult to ignore them. Look, the Cubs they have to play these games and they have to play the rest of the season. But as we alluded to earlier, it's very difficult to envision them doing anything except for putting themselves in a position to make another deal. They're 4-14 since June 25th. That's the second worst record in baseball in that span. Only the Royals are worse. So this is a team headed in the wrong direction, even though they won the series in Arizona. I don't know if what goes on the field in St. Louis matters as much as what's going on, you know, in Jed Hoyer's phone, because that's going to dictate the course of the next, not only season, this season, but the next couple seasons.
They barely had any business winning the series. If you did stick with it, and if you were listening to the first segment of the show and talking about the Wilson Contreras home run that you kind of sort of could see. But they did. But the good news is, if you're into the rebuild and into getting stuff back, is Friday and Saturday, you had that bullpen showing what they could do. I mean, the Cubs have a bullpen that could win games in the postseason. If your starting pitcher could get you to the sixth, if you could get to the sixth with a lead and hand it over to the Cubs bullpen, you feel pretty good. And this happened on Friday night, and it happened again Saturday. Not on Saturday that they had the lead, but then Kimbrel came in and shut it down. I mean, it was a great showcase for Tepera, Chafin, and Kimbrel. That's what it was, and those are pieces that are more than likely not going to be with this team come August 1st. So that's was the good news. Contreras looked like maybe the tough talk, right? That maybe that helped, and that he keeps delivering. Here's the thing about Contreras.
Except that last at bat yesterday.
Well, but again,
that was a great curveball.
Exactly.
On 3-2. Oh my gosh.
But here's the thing. You know, if Ross is going to, here's with catchers, especially with catchers. If you're going to give the guy the day off, then give the guy the day off. I do believe there is
a mental aspect. Come on.
Yes.
You would have second guessed
that decision not to go to Wilson Contreras.
Because
the games, unfortunately, don't matter as much as they do. But if you're going to give the guy the day off, then give him the day off. I don't think he was mentally prepared for that situation.
Okay.
Let me ask you a question.
When Lance Lynn said after signing his two-year, $38 million contract extension that, quote, there's no point in going into free agency if you know where you want to be, unquote, does that say more about Lynn or the Sox organization? Could Lynn's signing have any impact on Carlos Rodon's future?
Well, the first question is easier to answer, I think, because I guess the correct answer would be both. I mean, it certainly speaks to the White Sox culture that Lance Lynn wants to be a part of it. Lance Lynn is a winner. He's a gamer. He's a competitor. And he fits in seamlessly into a clubhouse that I think has accepted him for obvious reasons, but also a fan base that he somewhat represents. I love the social media, the Twitter, the tweet that shows Lance Lynn at a Zoom conference and says he looks like every White Sox fan because he's sort of like every man, and he has this relatability, and you like to see him kind of get excited on the mound in the way that he does. And it helps certainly that he is as good as he is. So I think that the White Sox culture has embraced him, but he's been an easy guy to hug because of how good he is. And Tom, I think I want to get into this later because it does strike me as so unusual. Professional athletes these days rarely say that they want to bypass free agency because if you know where you want to be, the money that you could potentially get more of in free agency isn't worth it, and isn't worth the price of happiness, of a good fit that I just described. Lance Lynn said that when he signed his contract extension, and I think that's somewhat rare in professional sports these days and should be commended. Will it have an effect on Carlos Rodon's future? One would hope. But I think that might be the part of the equation that's difficult to solve and most hard to predict because of the Scott Boras element. If Scott Boras is the one negotiating the contract extension for Carlos Rodon, my sense is that he's going to be looking at nine figures, or at least asking for a $100 million contract. The Sox have never had a $100 million player. I don't know that they start now with a left-hander as good as Rodon has been this year and what he may be coming off of. A World Series victory, maybe a Cy Young Award. You don't know. But as much success as he continues to have, the price keeps going up. So I don't want to go there yet, even though that would be the ideal scenario.
Yeah, I think, you know, you kind of got the ball rolling of Rodon's future when you signed Lance Lynn to this contract because, you know, it kind of put a dollar figure in the head of his representation of where the starting point's going to be. But there's a lot of, you know, a lot in his background in terms of health that you can't sit here and ask for an unrealistic amount of money if you have a track record of having some injuries in your past, especially as a pitcher. But when you look at Lance Lynn saying there's no reason to look at free agency because this is where I want to stay, I think they got that ball rolling a couple weeks ago when Abreu said the same thing. You know, they're trying to push him out the door, and he's going, hey, man, you guys better get more guys. I'm not going anywhere.
Right.
This is where I want to be. This is where I want to stay. And he is one of the biggest instigators of the exciting dugout that they have on this team. He's the guy that's doing the hugging and the back slapping and the high-fiving and the smiling when a young guy hits a first home run and gets to the end of the high-five chain, and he's there to give him that embraceable hug. You know, so This kind of atmosphere has been underway for a couple years, and now they've been able to put some more excitable pieces in place, have gravitated towards the excitement. So I'm excited to see that Lance Lynn had made that statement that this is the place I want to be. But agents don't care about that. Scott Boras is the guy. He's not in the dugout, so he could care less about it. He's all about the finances for his player. So about Rodon – Do you want to be on a team that has World Series capabilities for the next 3 or 4 years in a row, or do you want to go somewhere and try to be the best pitcher on the worst team?
The question I think we want to get to later, and you can speak to this better than we can, where does the player end and the agent begin when you're determining these kind of things, like the best fit, the happiest mindset, and a lot of the intangibles? Because it seems like the agent cares only about the bottom line, the dollar sign. Right. And I think that's worth exploring later.
Here's what I know for sure. 38 mil, though, it buys a lot of ribeye steak and a lot of IPAs. And that's something that Lance Lynn has told us that he likes. Okay, he enjoys the Chicago ribeye, and he enjoys the IPA. So good for him. And he does look like the 108ing, right? That's the 108ing group of guys. Like, yeah, he fits in with that group of guys. Good. He screams. To me, he screams this year's White Sox team. He just screams it. And I'll tell you what, David, if Carlos Rodon gets a $100 million contract,
okay,
baseball's out of control.
Don't put words in my mouth. I did not say he would get it. I said that he would ask for it. And I do think there's a difference there, because if you're coming off the season that he's coming off of, Dustin, don't you think, given his age, and I know his injury history, but if you're Boris, you're looking at 5 for $100 as a starting point?
I don't think with this deal, I think how this lines up, I think this Carlos is gone. Because I still think they're going to try to do something with Giolito. That's the other part of this. Like Giolito, I think if somebody's going to get $100 million from the White Sox, I'm not saying he's going to either, but it's Giolito. Like if you're gonna back up the truck on Giolito or Rodon, if that's your choice, I know right now that Rodon is doing better right now today, but the better candidate for that kind of dough is Giolito. But I'm thrilled for Lance Lynn, and I'm happy for Carlos Rodon. You know what? There's no loser here. Nobody lost. This is good for everybody, even White Sox fans.
Great question.
Wilson Contreras had a fascinating week, calling out his teammates exactly 1 week before he hit a ninth-inning home run to beat the Diamondbacks, a day before striking out with the tying run on second base Sunday to end the game. Do you consider Contreras trade bait, or a foundational piece worth locking up for the Cubs as they enter this seller phase?
To me, Contreras has kind of climbed the ladder of he's the guy I want around here. He kind of exhibits the enthusiasm, the excitement, what he does behind the plate, his total awareness of that's the kind of the guy you have to have. And, you know, David Ross, being a catcher in his background, he knows the importance of that role, the relationship he has with the pitchers. Like I said at the beginning of the show, he's kind of my new Javi Baez, who 2 years ago he was one of the most exciting players, you know, that to play the infield, the catches he can make, the tags, just his enthusiasm, his aggressive approach to base running. To me, I think Contreras is that guy now that has a little bit more serious of an edge. You know, he's not going to make have these brain cramp instances in the middle or at the beginning of a game where David Ross has to say, you know, look, go into the clubhouse and wait for me after the game. And so I'm all for Contreras. I think he's got an important role. He's a young guy. He's exciting. And I think catchers are difficult to find that can play at his level.
That last point is a strong one, because you need a catcher as you build your next great Cub team. As Jed Hoyer described it, you can't take a chance that the catcher that you have in your system, Miguel Amaya, that you want to become what Wilson Contreras is going to pan out. You don't want to trade somebody who means as much to this organization potentially and has meant as much as Wilson Contreras has. I think people forget that he's in his sixth season as a starting catcher. This is somebody who's been around a while and, by the way, been very good for the Chicago Cubs. So he's an asset. Now, you're going to have moments like last week that come up where he's emotional, he's invested, he cares, and he'll say some things that challenge some people. That's him. That's his brand of leadership. He holds people accountable. I think the Cubs needed to hear that, because you know what? He was right. He was right in what he said. Now, could he have chosen a different method to say it? we're always going to be able to second guess these kinds of things. And I'm sure the Cubs have talked to him or addressed this, and they had some open meetings about it. But Wilson Contreras is somebody definitely I would not trade, even though his contract is probably very manageable for teams and they're looking at the Cub assets. They might want to ask about Wilson Contreras, but you don't ever have an untouchable if you're dealing from the position that Jed Hoyer's dealing from. But I would not have Wilson Contreras on my list of top five players that I want to get rid of, because I would keep him and build around him.
He's my favorite Cub right now. It's not even close. I love his get after it attitude. His work ethic is fantastic. I get that he struck out on Sunday. I know, but again, I do believe he was given the day off than give the guy the damn day off. You're right, though, David. You are always in this situation that Cubs are in right now. You are always open for business. There is no untouchable. So if somebody wants to give you a starting pitcher that next year would line up probably as your third best starting pitcher and the best prospect in their farm system, I think you'd have to listen, despite the fact that he's my favorite Cub. That's definitely not going to stop the Cubs from moving Wilson Contreras, I can tell you that.
That's a good question, Dave. I think
after the Bears failed to sign a long-term contract with Allen Robinson before the franchise tag deadline last week, Packers safety Adrian Amos, a former Bear and ex-teammate of Robinson's at Penn State, tweeted the following, quote, "What more does he have to prove?" unquote. Well, how do you feel about a Packer publicly defending a Bear, even if he has a point? And if Robinson clearly wonders the same thing, how will it affect him as the start of training camp looms?
Well, two things there. I think Adrian Amos, it is interesting to see a Packer take up on behalf of a Bear, but their past kind of explains that relationship and how, you know, that is probably definitely the factor that led him to do this, more so than the fact that they're rivals right now, professional rivals, personal friends. So Adrian Amos has had a lot to say in social media in past years, but this was another interesting twist. I don't think it's going to affect Allen Robinson at all. I shouldn't say at all. I don't think it will affect Allen Robinson's production, because I think he's a consummate pro. I think I say that because he has proven that to be true the last couple of years. It doesn't matter what his contractual situation is. It doesn't matter what he may even say publicly. On Sundays, on Monday nights, Sunday nights, whenever the Bears play, he's invested into those 60 minutes. And he brings it, and he's productive, and he plays through a lot of things. And he hasn't had the best quarterbacks throwing him the football. Maybe that will change this year. Maybe it won't. But I do think you can count on Allen Robinson showing up for training camp, being invested as a professional, and being the guy that we have come to know in Chicago.
Adrian Amos saying, what more does he have to prove? He doesn't have to prove anything. You know, Allen Robinson is everything you want in a great teammate who shows up every week, who's ready to play. But it's proving what you are and having the performance that you need. You know, Allen Robinson is a great wide receiver. He is, you know, super competitive. He's courageous on the inside. But he's not going to offer you world-class speed. He's going to offer you what he's capable of. You know, he can give you 100 catches. When he addressed the media a couple weeks ago, what are you working on this year? I'm trying to work on making an 8-yard catch into a 12-yard catch. You can pay Allen Robinson accordingly. You can give him a long-term deal. But when you have to look at it from the inner office side of it, he's not going to be the highest paid receiver in the NFL. He just doesn't have those qualities. But does he have the qualities to get a contract from the Bears and pay him his value accordingly? He does. And it's still generational wealth. But again, you're not talking about paying Devontae. You know, Devontae Adams, he's a special receiver. He's also playing with a special quarterback. But there's other receivers around the league that have, you know, some of these world-class traits. And Allen Robinson, love him. I want him on my team. I wanted him to be a part of the Bears for the next 4 or 5 years. But unfortunately, if I'm looking at it from the position of a front office, I'm not paying him as the highest paid receiver in the league. I just can't negotiate him that way.
Did you ever have a Packer take it publicly on your behalf?
Yeah, McMichael. When he went, no, I'm kidding. Yeah, he went to Green Bay and finished his career there. But it's not that. It's more of their Penn State past
right.
than a Packer yeah. past.
Yeah, that's definitely a Penn State thing. And I think Tom said it very well. You want Allen Robinson on your football team. It's just that Allen Robinson is not a number one receiver in this league. He's just not. And being in the top five highest paid wide receivers for this year by being tagged is not a punishment. And it shouldn't be looked at that way. And how do we know yet how it's going to work between Allen Robinson and QB1 or QB1.5, whichever QB is going? We have to see. That relationship is hugely important, both in the development of a young quarterback and the future of that wide receiver. That's what I think they're going to look at. And I don't blame the Bears. This is not the McCaskies being cheap. That's the easy, low-hanging fruit. And when and if Allen Robinson has a bad day, it's going to go back to, well, if the Bears had paid him. Well, if the Bears had done that. Well, come on.
Or the next time he doesn't come up with a 50-50 ball. That mm-hmm. will come up in right. the conversation mm-hmm. like
absolutely.
He did last year.
It will be there, and that's unfortunate.
That is the 5 of 5. Those are our opinions. What about yours? 312-644-6767. How big was this weekend for the White Sox? Who's next to go for the Cubs? Anything else you want to discuss? Bears, Bulls, Zach LaVine scoring 13 points for the U.S. Olympic team. Let us know. We are here for you. Tom Thayer in for Mully. Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.